A silicon-based life form is unknown, unheard of, impossible.
Maybe it doesn't realize that. Hello, and welcome to the Whovian Review. I am Michael.
I'm Shelby.
I do believe I am still Jeremy.
I'm other Jeremy.
And I am the podcaster, still currently known as Colin.
Tonight we are going to embark in a journey through the Stones of Blood, which is the third chapter in the Key to Time season. And why am I talking like this and being very nonchalant? It's that's because Professor Amelia Rumford was this way pretty much throughout the entire story.
Oh, thank God there was a reason.
I know. I was going with the Twilight Zone at first there.
Well, I mean, like, when you started with your intro, I was like, all right, he's doing a fun intro, but then he just kept going.
Yeah.
There was just so much.
Are you saying it wasn't fun?
There was so much of her, though, that was just so realistic because of her portrayal and because she was, like, kind of in left field with her thought processes. And that was kind of what made her a more genuine character and very genuinely liked.
Yeah, when she was saying all the dates for all the historical times and sort of actually having to think about it for a second, it reminded me of my old history teacher who had to do the exact same. Like, oh yeah, that would probably be a realistic conversation with someone adept at, like, historical landmarks such as the megalithic structure they were at. Whatever hinge they were.
Well, I just think that she kind of definitely would have been a great, like, add-on to the TARDIS for another season or two if she could have joined.
Oh, yeah, she'd be a good foil.
Good foil to Tom Baker's Fourth Doctor.
Oh yeah, I liked her.
If we had to have an aged companion, which I think we should have a couple more of those every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need 19-year-olds every single time.
It's a demographic thing.
Oh, I know. I mean, it kind of goes back. It harkens back to Susan. Susan was a grandchild. You're going to want the young female assistant because the doctor is quite fascinated with them. And Romana is quite a glamorous one, but I wouldn't quite call her that young. She's, she was 149, I think, based on the last story.
Yeah, but relative to her culture.
She presented such.
Yeah.
Relative to her culture, she's young.
She's a young man?
Yeah.
Well, she still graduated from school, so.
That's true.
So she's a bit beyond the whole, and I'm talking about, like, college level kind of thing.
Right, so she's, like, relatively speaking in her 20s, I'd say, in, like, Time Lord society.
Yeah, she still hasn't gotten a real job yet, but she has a diploma.
Fresh out of college. Though I noticed in this story that the White Guardian came up again and just randomly told the Doctor to beware of the Black Guardian again, but, like, he really didn't pop up anywhere. It's like,
that we know of. I mean, I'm not sure that all of these encounters haven't just been encounters with the Black Guardian.
Mm-hmm.
He can be anyone.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the Megara is really, truly.
I love the Megara. Oh my God.
Oh, fantastic.
They were so great. They just, like, come in and are like, wow, you know, like, hey guys, I freed you from the cell. Well, you should not have broke that lock, man. Now we're going to have to kill you. And, like, just, like, hilarious slurs. Like, oh my God. There were so many phenomenal lines in this, and just those two characters were just. Oh, the writing was so good.
Yeah, that's the best interpretation of judge, jury, and executioner that I've seen before.
And the Doctor actually brings out for the first time his wig for a trial, and wears it quite well. And I think that might
does he?
Well, I think, well, true.
He definitely wears it. I mean,
you're right. Until David Tennant.
It on the ground. I mean, that's probably not the proper way.
The 14th Doctor wears it better, I guess.
He has less hair. I liked when he pulled out his sonic screwdriver and then just hit the lock with it.
Yeah.
I don't know that was the sonic screwdriver.
That
was
it sonic sure, screwdriver. Sure looked like it.
No, that wasn't the sonic. His sonic has a red tip.
Okay, it looked like a sonic screwdriver. Tip. Like
red tip.
No, it didn't. It definitely was not the Fourth Doctor's.
It was an orange tip?
It was an orange tip.
It was definitely not the sonic screwdriver.
Well, it was about twice the diameter of the sonic screwdriver, too.
Okay, then I take it back. That moment was no longer funny.
Yeah. Because that would have been funny if the whole idea... Because that was a metal door. That was finally a metal door.
Well, maybe that's what they were going for, but for some reason, maybe they just didn't have the actual sonic prop.
Or they didn't want to break the sonic prop.
Oh, that could be. It looked more like a sonic ram or something. I don't know. It just...
Right, like maybe something that could pass as the sonic, but would be less breakable than the actual
Probably, prop. Yes.
Kind of like the jelly babies in the previous story.
Right, yeah, when they were the just like little round, like donut shaped things. I think they were just like washers that
jelly
were
jelly rings.
Yeah, well, I think they had jelly babies in the bag
that he threw. Right, and but on the ground.
Because Romana actually had a jelly baby in hand, or the doctor did at one point. But then there were extra candies that were just kind of thrown out.
They spent too much money on all the gems, and they didn't have any left over for jelly babies.
Possibly true. Or they just ran out of jelly babies. It happens.
There's a loose talk that day.
We had to do something. Anyway, back to this story. We start off with DeVries and Martha, his wife, I believe, and not exactly the greatest of actors since they were so over the top and redonkulous in their approach.
Yeah, I kept forgetting they existed when they were not on screen.
Well, because they weren't really there for very long. It was basically the first episode, and then they're dead.
Yeah, you know what was a lot more important to the story is Romana's shoes. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Romana definitely needed better shoes. And that it kind of goes to the whole trope of all the assistants wearing high heels and impractical shoes for running in.
The really horrible thing is that the doctor actually recognizes this. Like, instead of just being, you know, oblivious like he sometimes is, he, like, recognizes, oh, wait, this is inappropriate footwear for my assistants to be wearing. And then he proceeds to not point that out to, like, a whole line of girls afterwards.
And he could have.
The thing was, is that it could have been a great thing to be like, why are you wearing those shoes? Like, they're fashionable or something. Yeah. Well, we're going to be in the swamp or on dirt.
Yeah.
Chained.
Well, I mean, I think in this case, you know, the doctor's always trying to push her buttons because...
Alright, well, but then go walking out, and I'm just watching her as she's trying to walk as the actress. I'm just like, oh, this is not fun for you.
Classic TARDIS hazing.
Honestly, I feel like probably that got written into it because the actress walked out in the costume she was given and was like, I cannot walk in these. Yeah. And they were like, put it in.
Oh, that would make a lot of sense.
We'll get around it this way.
Well, he did actually get her back to the TARDIS to get appropriate footwear, so that was at least reasonable.
Mm. Although it seemed like she had plenty of time to do that, you know, in between the doctor leaving her alone with those two people, the two people leaving, and you know, then, like, her falling off the cliff.
Well, it's almost like overnight.
She could have, like, walked back to the TARDIS and changed, it seems like.
At any point, she could have walked. As she was starting to walk barefoot, just walk back to TARDIS rather than walking to a rocky cliff edge as you see her bare feet on sharp rocks. Going to the edge.
Well, she thought she was... Well, she was actually going towards the doctor.
My point was that she could have walked back before then any time and got...
Well, she thought the doctor was in trouble. She was probably trying to get to him. That would have made some sense.
Yeah, but before that, she had a lot of time in which she could have put on appropriate footwear.
I think, she spent the entire day helping out.
Yeah.
And then, they're like, oh, we're going home for the evening.
Yeah, and it was like the TARDIS was like how far away from there? It seemed like it was a few yards.
Yeah.
Well, they needed their literal cliffhanger, so.
Yeah.
This is true. This is one of the few and actual literal cliffhangers. And then we have the character of Vivian Fay, who starts off as Professor Rumford's assistant and turns out to be not her assistant.
A very on the nose name.
Vivian Fay. True. I can't remember quite what her actual name was.
Oh, it was something difficult to pronounce.
Something.
Yeah.
Something like that. But she was in control of the Ogri, who she stole from Ogros.
So, like, do we think that she's conscious? But just, like, as a stone and, like, recognizing all of time going by, like...
She's stuck there
And they did say forever. Like, that's real harsh. You got to think, like, imagine billions of years from now and the Earth has blown up and she's just floating around in space.
I thought it was for thousands of years she was there.
That was the first sentence.
But at the end when they turned her into a stone and said that you're permanently...
She got two sentences for...
Oh. So she can never... Well, unless something comes along and undoes her.
Yeah.
So forever, there's a stone statue in England somewhere.
It's not a statue. It just looks like one of the other...
Okay, just a Stonehenge kind of rock.
Okay.
That's really a conscious being.
You know, what is this justice system that we have going on here? It seems, you know...
Very harsh.
Yeah, very dystopian and very, like, harsh in different dimensions, too. So, like, there's this woman, like, kidnapping, you know, all of these beings and doing, like, these big international crimes that they actually came here for. And then this other guy, like, just, like, on a bureaucratic, like, pick of a lock, touch of a button, you know, must be immediate execution.
Yeah.
Versus, like, this grand crime that's, like... Well, life in prison is as much as we're gonna go. I mean, it's not like you broke a bureaucratic rule here.
I think
her punishment was worse.
Yeah,
it might be, but it's not clear. Maybe conscious, maybe not.
Also, it seems weird for like a computer program to come to that conclusion because there's like a lot of cruelty embedded in it. You know?
Oh, it's programmed that way.
I mean, I just gather it was for a laugh or some sort of commentary on how ridiculous certain laws were back then, probably.
Oh, I'm sure that had something to do with it. I mean, everybody makes fun of the justice system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more creative way to make fun of lawyers.
Yeah.
Yeah, though the doctor did say objection quite a few times, postponing his death, and called upon various witnesses. Though I wonder why they didn't... I mean, I can see why they didn't exactly use the truth receptor on Vivian, who was, like, what, Cecile?
Yeah, or whatever.
Whatever her name is.
Cecile.
Cecile. They didn't use the truth because they're like, oh, yeah, she's not connected, so we don't need, when she's under oath, to you know... actually figure out if she's lying or not.
I mean, I think that actually the explanation for that was a lot more fair than everything else that we know about their society, which was basically like, we're not, you know, permitted to go and read people's minds unless, you know, it requires it because of, like, the law and going through a trial.
Right, but they did put her under oath, so, like, just to confirm that she's not lying, it would be, you know...
It wasn't like they were assessing, like, the need for a truthful response.
I mean, usually whenever you're under oath, the idea is that if they're going to do a truth thing, that's when you do it. You do it under oath, you're going to be truthful, your name is, stuff like that.
Yeah, but, in the background, she did display her name as Vivian instead of her actual name, so that's lying under oath, so... They didn't come up with the extra 50 years or whatever.
Yeah, it seems odd that they would allow her to testify and they wouldn't, you know, do a truth.
It's like one of those things where it's like, if the lines weren't so funny, I would be getting more annoyed about it, but...
Yeah, but I think that, you know, it was a commentary on just kind of the focusing on the letter of the law and ignoring the spirit of the law type of thing. But yeah, that one was pretty heavy-handed.
Yeah.
Yeah, but out of protocol, they also tended to an unconscious Vivian, and then were able to sort of discover that she wasn't who she said she was. I feel like that's a little out of protocol for how to the T and dot.
Well, they said that you're not allowed to do it unless they're unconscious or dead or, you know, stupid.
I'm surprised lying under oath didn't give you a death penalty. If breaking a lock gives you a death penalty.
Yeah.
It would have been nicer, though, if they had made it a little less obvious that Vivian Fay was, in fact, this character. Because I think they kind of hinted at it pretty early on, and they had threw away some lines, right, especially when she's talking to Romana, about, like, when she's trying to get Romana to ride a bicycle. It's okay. Nothing could happen to you. It just seemed like almost like they were overstepping it and making it too obvious. Because then once the doctor...
I don't feel like I needed that mystery, you know, in this. Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of times it's kind of drawn out and you're like, I'm pretty sure, you know, this person saw something in this dimension. Let's see exactly why and how it shakes out. Like, I didn't think that it needed...
And maybe someone who is really conscious about, like, trying to appear normal would oversell it.
Right. And I actually thought, I mean, I looked at it as more like this reminded me of the Doctor Who of it. It's a series for kids generally, right? And in essence, I don't think at this point it was really targeted towards adults. There were some adults who were fans, but this was still like, I think the BBC would say a kids show in some ways. Or at least like a fun show.
Family shows, what family they show. Would they call they really had it as, because right. Mom and Dad would be on the couch and the kids would be behind it.
Yeah,
so enjoyable with all audiences.
Right. Rocking. So this is you know, we would use it G for general audiences or PG.
PG. PG. Yeah.
Point is though, I feel in those things, yeah, you can telegraph as much as you want, as long as you don't burn it. I mean, it was fun. Like the minute you saw our first bad couple, I was like, oh, you are... No guy with that haircut is going to be the bad guy in the end. Or that mustache. No, you're not going to make it to the end. I saw him, and I was like,
victim.
No. Yeah, this is pretty much...
Oh, and, like, I also like the
his
bird.
Was great.
The big, you know, Corvid who was coming in. We were all sitting there going, is that a crow or a raven or a rook? And he's like... Beware of the crow and raven.
You're not helping.
Pick one.
They're not the same.
Yeah, that's why I was like, it looks like a raven more than a crow, but I cause
and at first we were like, it's a crow. It's a crow, and then
I think
crow
it's a
and
rook.
Raven, and it's like,
now we're
could be a rook.
Crow.
Well, whatever it was something that was. Very ominous, because that was one decent thing about
classic
this story was that they definitely had more of a horror-esque kind of vibe, kind of harken back to the Philip Hinchcliffe years a little bit, but they had a good balance between that and the humor, because you had that poor couple that were out camping that ended up getting killed off by the ogre.
Oh yeah, it went after more
Daddy,
than just blood.
They took.
Everything
with like, the bones.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think Patty got named and boyfriend. Well, to say boyfriend.
I think he had a name too, but yeah, Patty definitely had her name.
So for silicon-based life forms and how rock-like they were, just like sort of going up the stairs seemed like it would have been a problem since they were more or less limbless.
I think they were appearing as rock forms, so maybe their actual form was more mobile and they just looked like giant rocks.
Yeah, I just sort of wanted to figure elevate somewhere and mumbles through the rock, elevate.
I liked when they were pulling shredded paper out of canine, like just by the fistfuls.
Right.
Makes you wonder what all that was. I also liked how the ogre had kind of like a almost like a face, so it looked kind of like a old man of the mountain kind of look.
Yeah,
and that in of itself can be kind of scary looking, just because it's very emotionless and they don't care what they're gonna go and gulp down. So I could see why that could be scary. Now, granted, we're a little older now, so we probably aren't going to be nearly as scared by glowing rocks that fall over the cliffs.
I don't know. If I was camping in the woods and I woke up in two giant rock pillars that weren't there before,
I'm going in the middle of my tent,
yeah, I'm out of there. That's terrifying.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would go touch them.
I'm not going to touch them. I'm not going to go anywhere near them.
Well, now you won't because you know what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly probably would touch them in that scenario to see if they were fake. I would have done exactly what she did.
I mean, I'd probably touch it with a stick or something.
There, yeah. Touch it with a stick, please. If you're going
well,
to touch
it with... Well, I'd be with Colin and he'd make me touch it with a stick, so we're fine.
The doctor is talking...
I'd have the wherewithal to, you know, tell you...
We just want to make sure we give a PSA. If a rock appears, a big pile of rocks or anything appears next to your campsite, overnight, touch it with the rock first.
Yeah. I'll just go as far as to say, like, never pet a rock that is strange to you.
The doctor actually talks about these rocks to Amelia, and he has one of the greatest lines of the whole thing. If they do break through, run as fast as you can, as if something very big and nasty were chasing after you, because something very big and nasty will be running after you.
I also liked K-9's line at the beginning where Romana was like, wait, what's tennis? And he explains it, and she's just like, oh, never mind, just forget it. And he goes, confirmed, erased, removed all references to tennis. From databanks.
Yeah. Whoops. You gotta be careful with what you say to K-9.
I really hope that comes back. I can't remember if it does.
I don't know. That would be hilarious. A few stories down the road. What's tennis? Tennis? I don't know. I have no clue.
And my database do not talk about tennis.
Yeah, we'll be having a hard time playing fetch with a tennis ball, similarly.
But he was such a good dog in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Such a good boy.
Yeah, he's been pulled by strings everywhere. He didn't have to walk as far.
Yeah, you could tell someone was doing something with him, because all of a sudden he just jumps forward really fast, and you're like, whoa, K-9 to the rescue. That's when he goes after Romana, so I guess that makes sense.
He also put up, I mean, they said it was a force field, but it looked more like he was just shooting lasers at
I think they probably didn't know what the special effects guys were capable of at the time.
I think when they do the Blu-ray for this season, I think this story will probably be the one they gets the upgrade in special effects. I'm just guessing, just because there's a lot more you could do with what you got.
You know, I will say my favorite actual special effects, and this one was not touched up at all, right?
No, yeah.
Yeah, was actually when K-9 had the weak beam. I actually like how it looked.
Oh,
like
yeah.
It was like, that feels more detailed. Like, it was like these two lines that were orbiting like around. I was like, oh, that was cool. Cooler than the laser beam, like, force field thing.
Right.
Definitely. Yeah, I've been doing all the original effects for these so far. I think Pirate Planet had a whole mess of added effects, which actually did enhance the story, because they actually looked like they were shooting people, which you don't see anything coming out of anything from the original. But in this case, they didn't have any special effects added.
Well, but I mean, like, realistically, if you were being shot with, like, a laser weapon, you wouldn't see, like, a big beam of light sailing across to hit you. It's light. You'd just see, like, a blink of a light, and you would be hit.
You'd just be dead.
Right. Yeah, like,
you wouldn't see nothing.
I mean, like, looking across the battlefield, though, like, you wouldn't be seeing those beams of lasers. That's just to help the audience out. Like, it's really more realistic for them to not have it.
Unless the weapons are designed in a way that they actually show off the laser when it's going.
Why would you want that?
Well, easily, if you want to actually, if you want to have a trajectory as to where the laser's going, it's better to have that visual so you know exactly where you're aiming.
Okay, yeah, but if you're aiming, then yeah, you would just want, you know, the line, but that's not what they're, you know, putting in. They're putting in, like,
the laser itself.
The laser itself. No, it's like with shooting a regular gun and, like, showing the bullet slowly making it across the screen so you can, like, watch the bullet go. It doesn't really make sense, and bullets are slower.
Yeah, this is true.
Right. Well, I guess it's less cool to be shining flashlights at people.
Yeah, no, it definitely is.
Yeah, but these things are never really laser weapons, are they?
Well, true. They could be other form of light.
Light technology.
Phaser blaster 9000, for instance.
Could be.
It shoots glow sticks.
Tonic charger. Charges.
Well, they had to use what they had at the time. Mm-hmm. And if it was a little itty-bitty red flashlight, well, gosh darn it, it was a little itty-bitty red flashlight.
I mean, it's better than a cat pointer. Although, admittedly, that would be pretty cool if you had a bunch of those, like, red dots. I think in one of the previous episodes, they did have red dots on the Force Doctor. I forget what story it was from, but it would be interesting if, at the very least, the lasers had, like, viewfinders that that were actually functional. Otherwise, it's just people shooting a laser and expecting it to hit its target. It feels like it would be not very user friendly.
Yeah, but also if they've got helmets or visors on, then you can really, you know, give them benefit of the doubt on maybe they've got some technology wired up where like they can see the sight, but no one else can, you know. Right. But you're right, if they've got, you know, clearing vision, that's harder to allow for.
I will say one thing about this story that I was a little critical about is when the Romana actually quote unquote sees the doctor and he pushes her off the cliff, they could have actually elaborated on that. We could have actually seen the doctor there as well. And I think they could have played off on her mistrusting the doctor a little bit more in that next episode, because that seems like it was just very convenient. The doctor says, yeah, I'm the doctor. Or Canine, who am I? I'm the doctor. Okay, yeah, I'm the doctor.
Well, and also it wasn't played with more throughout. Like, there wasn't a lot
of...
Yes. And it wasn't like the doctor appearing or someone... No one was being confused the rest of the series. That was actually one of my bigger, like...
Yeah, it was kind of like... You kind of didn't need it in there, except for someone was like, put a cliffhanger in that episode.
The most literal cliffhanger we can find.
Well, they did want to have the transformation part of it, because that's the aspect of the Key to Time that they're looking for. So the fact that Vivian Fay can be someone else, or that the Doctor is being presented as the one killing Romana, that I understand. But if you're going to have that there, don't just drop it. Actually go with it. It's a very interesting way of introducing that.
Like, I mean, and I get, like, that they had to realize that, you know, Vivian Fay was 4,000 years old or whatever, but, like, also, if you had a magic item that could transform you to look like whatever you wanted, why wouldn't you vary your appearance, like, every other generation or whatever, right? Like...
Nostalgia. She just really liked that form. I mean, it looked a lot like her, but with less silvery skin.
I mean, then you gotta get all new paintings done all the time. Really, you can just take them off the
wall. But
walls,
she did get new paintings done all the time.
Yeah. Well, she did look a little bit different. I mean, obviously she was aged in that
third
one.
She needed to wear different clothes.
Yeah, different clothes. A little bit wrinkles, more wrinkles here and there.
Yeah, she probably, like, instructed the painter to,
Yeah, less chrome.
More Firefox. Sorry.
And more clothing. A little. She definitely, when she goes all silvery, she definitely has an interesting wardrobe change.
I have to wonder how long it took to, I guess, make up, or I hope not.
Can be an hour and a half now. That's makeup.
They probably just like took her and like
dunked her in her tank.
Came right back up.
If it were that easy, I can tell you every makeup artist wish it could be that easy.
They did a really good job for that skin though.
That
really well done.
That's what I mean. That would easily at least an hour to make certain it was well applied and you didn't see like smudge marks. That takes a lot of skill.
Right. Yeah, and she probably like. Man, she had to, like, lean against a bunch of things, and, like, I feel like if her arm got on it instead of her costume, it would have just smudged it up after
reading
it.
Yeah, it was,
like,
here's the thing. Footprints all on set.
I'm just going to say this. Actor has to wear prosthetics or any of those sort of crazy makeup things, I feel for them. Your nose itches, you're in hell.
If anything itches.
I mean, honestly, for Vivian Fay... That would be the greatest punishment.
An itchy nose.
Perpetual itchiness. The most draconian punishment possible.
All right, should we rate this sucker?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
This blood-sucking stone of an episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Go for it, Colin.
All right, I'm going right in. You know what? I like my rocks, a little vampiric. I thought that was fun. And you know what? Why not let them glow? And then why not let them be outshined in glow by, a justice force from outer space? Maybe even another type of space. You know,
hyperspace.
Yes, we have time, we have space, and we have some other type of space too. You know, you keep.
That's
adding.
Absurd.
Absurd as it is, maybe as absurd as Silicon Life, on Earth from a Professor Sorial standpoint.
She was just an archaeologist.
She had a grasp of physics. She was with it. I love the character. I would invite her back again and again. Mm-hmm. So I think we had a lot of great elements here. I did feel like this was a slow start for me to get invested. But once I was there, I thought it had some nice magic to it. Some good one-liners and some good dialogue, some good chemistry, and I think all in all, some good acting. I think we could pinpoint some exceptions to that. I think you could, you know, nearly always do that. But I think all in all, it does well in having good pacing, and I can even see this having a good rewatchability as well. And for me, that's often where classics fall short. This was a good episode for me. I think it hit on a lot of things. I can't say that it's perfect. There's plenty of opportunities for improvement. But I'm going with an 8.5 out of 10.
I will go next.
Okay.
I think, yeah, I agree with a lot of what Colin said. I think this was fun. There were a lot of great lines. Honestly, we had trouble picking our intro because there were so many good lines. You know, yeah, the acting was good, and, you know, the story for the most part was good. I loved the juror, lawyer, judges, guys. I'm going to give this one an 8 out of 10.
Okay. I guess I can go next. So, I mean, it's already been kind of said, this was just a pleasant experience. It was... There are definitely, again, there are issues. I think we mentioned some of them, which kind of like are like unutilized plot points and a couple of other things. I mean, but the best shiny vampires ever were in this one. I mean, so I can't complain with rock vampires either. I mean, they rock.
Oh dear.
Had to do it.
They suck and they rock.
Thank you.
Help.
Thank you. And it was really, it's just a sign of why we should have more robot justice systems in the future.
Is it a sign of that? Is that what you got for this?
I mean, you can probably talk, what it shows here, if you have the mind like the doctor, you probably talk your way out of anything.
I, for one, welcome our new AI overlords.
I mean, I'm saying we are okay with AI judges and lawyers. Wink, wink. Just so they know.
Yes, and we'll only release you if it's okay.
Yes, absolutely, which it always will be. Anyhow, so I'm going to go with I think I might go a little bit higher, 8.5. I just really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, I suppose I will go next. I feel like that this story was quite engaging, pretty much through each of the episodes. They each had their high points, especially towards the latter half, how it picked up with the lawyer / judge / executioners. Which I definitely appreciated that, since I felt like the whole cult thing was a bit either overplayed or underplayed at the same time somehow. Because when it was there, it was there. But when it wasn't, you just sort of forgot about it. So that's a little bit of a weak point in the story. But I'd say I like the initial mystery of the stone circle, and it slowly unraveled, and they got teleported to, what was it called, the something space?
Hyperspace.
Which, you know, they've been in all kinds of weird spaces before, so I'm sure it was nothing particularly new. But yeah, it was a fun story. I'd had to probably rate it maybe a go split in the middle between an 8 and an 8.5 and go 8.3 out of 10.
Interesting.
Oh, sorry, just one quick interjection. Also, stone circles, for those of you who don't know, are, like, there's a lot of them, like, around in the United Kingdom. And also Stonehenge, the henge part is referring to a ditch that's dug around the stone circle, not actually anything to do with the stones itself. Sorry, fun facts seemed necessary.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah. We need some fun facts.
They rock.
This is getting way too punny. Any rate, this story, I feel kind of mixed on this story. It is a little bit slower of a start there, and like you said, Jeremy, the whole cult thing, I totally agree with what you just said. It was underwhelming and a little over the top when it was there, and a little too in your face. With that said, this had an amazing last two episodes, and it was very hard to take your eyes off of Vivian Fay, but also just the whole judge, jury, and trial thing was really amazing. And I feel like this is one of those stories where, I don't know, parts of it are very underwhelming, and parts of it are very pleasant and very wonderful to listen to. And I think part of that is that we, of course, had more influence from Douglas Adams at this point. And certainly they were trying to go for a more humorous element to this season. And you'll see that hugely in the next episode or story that we get to watch. But in this case, I'm going to give this a 7 out of 10 because it is a solid story. I think there's a lot of good. It also goes a lot into the mythos of Doctor Who. And that's one thing that I really like, the stories that do that, kind of giving you ancient history and all sorts of histories that don't really apply necessarily right now, but apply elsewhere or another universe or another timeline or whatever. And so this really kind of brings a lot of that to the program, which is, I mean, this whole season kind of brings a lot of that with the Guardians and everything else too. But this story just kind of enhances that. So yeah, I'll give it a solid rating, but nothing like too over the top, because we don't need to be over the top like the one couple. Any rate, also in news, I should point out that there's rumors going around that the new companion, Ruby. Ruby Sunday. She is only supposed to be there for one season, or that the BBC might have fired or gotten rid of or laid off the actress who plays her, Millie Gibson.
And or she could have quit, potentially. I mean, they definitely didn't lay her off because that means she wouldn't be replaced.
Well, the thing is that I don't think she was always going to be a two-season companion. I think she is going to be in the second season, and I think her run will be there. Because they had already started filming season two already, so they're way ahead of schedule in filming. So it's possible that a few episodes in season two will have her. And as far as I know, she was contracted for two seasons, so she might as well be in the equivalent of two seasons, whether that includes the third season or whether it just includes just parts of the second, like Martha Jones was. As a matter of fact, I don't know if any of you know that, but Freema Agyeman was actually contracted for two full seasons and was supposed to be the companion for both seasons 3 and 4. But because her reception and the writing of her character wasn't as on par as Rose's, and because Catherine Tate also said, yeah, sure, I'll do it, they decided to kind of push Freema to the side, which I felt they could have just fixed the writing. I don't know. But anyway, that's off topic. I just wanted to point out that these are rumors, and the BBC hasn't really announced anything, so don't blow your top off. Don't start thinking, oh my God, she's a terrible actress, or don't think that, oh my gosh, the Russell T. Davies and crew are just getting rid of her. I think whatever they planned out was already planned out because they had to. They had to really kind of plan things out so they could get it all done.
Maybe she's going to pull a Rory and die and then never have existed and then come back as plastic.
What we're saying is breaking news, ignore this news.
Exactly. I think it's that it's not that important, and I think there are definitely a lot of people that are running with the story.
And it's also possible that, you know, Russell T. Davies just made up this rumor in order to get people really excited.
Oh yeah, no, I totally would see him doing that. Also, sadly, this is my son's final episode for quite a while. He will not be joining us next week, so he'll have to watch Key to Time at home.
I mean, it's not that Zach. He's taking a class in college that is going to conflict with
absolutely our
schedule, and it's yes, not like yeah. for a sad oh, reason.
Yeah. It's like, no, I know it's not for a sad reason.
No, I was honestly wondering how you're going to approach this one first. I was like, dude, gotta lay it on the sadness harder. Like, this is Jeremy's.
Well,
last
I'm episode. Sad because I like bringing him and I like to
you
have
still
him
got Jeremy here.
Here.
At least I'm a backup. Come on.
Yeah,
a backup?
Just in case anything happens, you know.
You cannot be replaced.
Nobody can be replaced. That's not possible. But I'm just...
But we're excited to introduce you to our new podcaster.
Ahmed, take the stage.
I jest, I'm pretty sure.
It should just be four of us, as far as I know. Unless people have heard otherwise.
Anyway, you're rating...
I heard that there was a rumor about someone being replaced.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're true.
Was it 7-4? I think it
was 7. At any rate, that wraps up this episode of the Hooving Review, and we'll be coming back for more Key to Time next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care, everybody.